morning, my friends. Good morning and welcome to Frankly Speaking Radio, our Wednesday edition, heard worldwide on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome aboard. 8 o'clock a.m. Central Time Zone on the nose, and it is Wednesday, March 9th, 2005. Already 2 hours into the program, and still an exciting 2 hours left to go. Our guest will be joining us here in just a moment. Folks, go ahead to the website, rbnlive.com, not only just to listen, but also to go to that bookstore. There's some great stuff in there that you need to have to further not just your knowledge, but the knowledge of those you care about. I think there's nothing wrong. If there's somebody is close enough to you, you can go ahead and pick up a book for them and say, you know what, just do me a favor, read this. That's all I ask. I'll never ask anything else to begin. Just read this. Check this out. Let me know what you think. So definitely see what they've got available. And of course, our guests have all, you know, contributed in some way, shape, or form to the information explosion out there. So, yeah, you can do stuff to help other people, and you should. I'd like to welcome those just joining us on shortwave at 13.570. If that even works, again, I hear that it does. Never heard from anybody who said hearing you loud and clear on shortwave. So if it's not working, or if it is working, I would like to know, because it's costing me a pretty penny for that shortwave, and if it ain't working, I need to know about it. I'd also like to, of course, thank a sincere and heartfelt thank you, deep appreciation for all of the broadcast outlets around this country and around the world who deem this program worthy of broadcast. I appreciate you giving us a wider listenership and a louder voice in the world. There is so much that needs to be out there. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed perhaps more often, even if it's been addressed before. Let's go over it again. It has to be done. So I thank you very much. Again, the website, franklyspeakingradio.com, and the phone number, should you wish to interact with myself or our guest today, is 1-800-313-9443. And we will go to our guest here in just a second, but let's wrap up with Renee in North Carolina. Renee, you were just talking about how we have a duty. I almost said a burden, and in a way it is also, but a duty to help other people as well, and I agree with you. I think if we see a worst-case scenario develop, those people we will laugh at and say, ha-ha, you know, you should have paid attention, this is your own fault. Those people will not just be a burden on society in that form, but also be a burden upon us.
Well, and that's why, before I close, I want to share a few little tips figured out, like, in other words, to control your air supply. Now, I do have a new Mojo air filter. It's like, you know, I can justify that investment because, you know, I do have asthma, and my other one was old, and I have this new just cranking machine. But the thing is, I have a few tips for people that I figured out to control the air supply in their home. If something breaks out, you might want to, like, tape a garbage bag over the front of your fireplace, because air does enter through here. And, you know, or also tape, let me know, like a Ziploc bag over the bathroom vent. And another thing, keep on hand, you know, buy the better quality air filter for your air conditioner, the pleated variety, and keep an extra one on hand in the event where you want to control the air supply coming into your home. You take that extra air filter, because you have to have some new air. You just can't seal yourself in, I mean, and breathe, you know, have no oxygen, fresh oxygen coming in. And tape that air filter, open your window and tape that air filter against your screens where you can have some fresh air coming in, but at least it is filtered before it gets in. Because air is going to come in. It'll come in around your doors and stuff. But in other words, to get some fresh air, that's just some little tips I have, you know, and I would also
maybe get a little
hospital-type mask that does filter out, you know, bacteria.
Well, we got to go to break here, girl. I appreciate the call, as always. Yeah, folks, check out ReadyReserveFoods.com. Go ahead and give Dave a call there. They have this great DVD, Sheltering in Place. You need to see that. Also, I believe they might have masks, or at least can point you in a good direction. So anyway, we come back. Our guests, stay with us.
Of your voice.
Good morning, my friends, and welcome back. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio, heard around the world on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Frank Whalen, and glad to have you aboard with us here today. Again, the website, franklyspeakingradio.com, that will have a link to our guest's website and some information on, well, all the things that you heard today, a whole lot of things you haven't got to hear about today. The phone number, if you'd like to weigh in with your thoughts, your comments, your questions, 1-800-313-9443. That's a toll-free number and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. As most of you know who've listened to this program since its inception here on Republic Broadcasting Network, I'm fairly new, I guess, in the grand scheme of things to a lot of this material, to the Patriot movement and Patriot-style radio. I have been doing a show like this for the last 4 years on a just a locally owned FM frequency rock and roll morning show. And the people I talked to were people like me who didn't necessarily know a lot of this stuff and didn't necessarily know a lot of this subject matter and didn't know that a lot of wonderful people were out there talking about this for decades and decades. So it has been, as I like to term it and have stated earlier even today, this show has been a great way for me to educate myself. It's my selfish pursuit of knowledge, as I like to term it. And I applaud all the people who have come along on this journey with us, because it is important. None of us were ever born knowing anything. And it's arrogant to ever assume that we know everything there is to know about anything. So that's what I like about, I think my approach is simply that I'm still trying to learn. So as a result of that, a lot of you get a refresher course if you've already known it, and others out there maybe are hearing it for the first time as well. So it's a good opportunity and a good format to really delve deeply into places where some others won't go. And it needs to be done frequently. It needs to be done often. And obviously, as I looked into this and as I came along in this walk, many people were pointed out to me and said, look, if you can ever get this guy on, this is the guy to have. One name that has always popped up with a high degree of frequency has been my guest today. His website, www.eustacemullins.com. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, my guest, Eustace Mullins. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, welcome to the show. Welcome to World War III.
I hear you. It's getting to be a very fascinating and yet crazy place. So there's just so much going on. I have places I'd like to go with this, but I'll tell you what. You, Eustace, have been doing this for so long, and I know it's such an opportunity for me to learn a little bit about you here in this next 2 hours and your insights and your research angles and what you've looked at, that I would just love it if you'd start us off on whatever something you feel passionate about, something you feel needs to be addressed more often.
Well, I feel very passionate about us being in Iraq. You know, I've written a number of articles on it, which are available on my website. And the Iraq story is not our valiant struggle to overthrow a brutal dictator, Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was a loyal asset of the CIA under the Bush family for 40 years. And for us to suddenly turn on him and denounce him must have been quite a shock to him.
I can only imagine.
Anyway, we had the weapons of mass delusion, which were the purpose of our foray into Iraq, and we haven't found any yet, but our soldiers are still getting killed over there.
I think one of the things I've noticed, Eustace, and I'd like your take on it, is that all of these little campaigns that we get involved in, they stem up, again, primarily from the war on terror. Now, the war on terror implies that our war is against people who would seek to disagree with us using violent means. But in essence, the whole point of terrorism, for the most part, historically, has been to draw attention to a cause. Well, it doesn't seem that there is any cause behind this, and it doesn't seem that there's any point or any quantifiable goals that we could look at and say this is how we would deem success or even just resolution to A, the war on terror, B, all the things that come under that, such as Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, here are two complex military actions that have never been declared a victory and don't appear to ever be declared a victory anytime soon.
Well, I've pointed out frequently that the last victor, the last person that won a war in the Middle East was Lawrence of Arabia in 1917, and everybody since then has just gotten into deep trouble there.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a very promising venture. Again, for the most part, there's no way for us to figure out how to succeed because we don't know what would be deemed as a success. I mean, what is they can say, oh, as soon as it's stabilized. Nothing is ever stabilized. You can't win a war on terror because it's a war against a different mindset. And just like I've always said, I don't think you can have world peace. The only way you can do that is two ways. One, if everybody agrees with everyone else on everything, which will never happen. Or two, when you remove the opportunity to disagree. Those are methods for achieving world peace, and I think that we might be leaning towards the latter.
Well, Alger Hiss tried to give us world peace when he set up the United Nations. Of course, he was working as a KGB agent, which was not the best recommendation.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see that as working out too well either.
It hasn't worked out at all.
Yeah. Well, where do you see this situation in Iraq developing from here on out?
Well, the situation in Iraq meant going backwards in time.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Babylon, Baghdad, has been there for 60,000 years. And we're sort of newcomers in the area. And so what we're trying to do is we first turned the clock of the world back to 1100 A.D. to the Crusades, the fight between Christians and Muslims over Jerusalem. That's really what's going on out there today.
So do you think it's a sort of resurgence of this crusade mentality?
Oh, absolutely, because
yeah.
that is World War III. That's the only way they could get World War III going. There was no other contenders, and there still aren't. But we're moving into Iran, Syria, and Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And the goal is control of the biggest oil fields in the world. That's a very worthwhile goal.
Oh, sure.
But
yeah.
We're not talking about that at all. And we've consistently denied that we're going to get an oil out of Iraq. In fact, we haven't gotten any yet.
So, yeah, and that's the other thing is all these people who were against the war were saying no blood for oil. And, you know, I think the other people are saying, well, wait a minute here. Maybe a little bit of blood would be okay if we had a little bit of oil, but nobody's getting any oil. You know, the prices keep going up.
We've got lots of blood, but we haven't got any oil.
Yeah, there's no payoff here. No, you're right about it, and I agree. I do see this as a crusade, a religious crusade. And this
is it's definitely a religious
yeah.
crusade, and that's why the Christian evangelicals are so powerful in this country, because they are the mainspring of this crusade.
People absolutely.
Like Jerry Falwell and Tim LaHaye and all these people. They're selling millions of books. They're flooding the United States with their evangelical books, and they're all about being raptured up to heaven, which is a very nice thing if it works. I don't know whether I'm ready to take the trip or not.
Yeah, I hear you. I think it's okay to say, hey, if we get raptured out of here, fantastic, but at the same time, I'm not going to bank on it. So,
well, the beautiful thing about the rapture is that you don't have to do anything. You just wait for the 747 to come and pick you up.
Is that what it's going to be? 747?
Oh, yeah.
See, I'm on the no-fly list, Eustace, so I think that's going to be a problem for me.
Well, I'm not flying it either, but I don't think we're going to win the war on terror by making white-haired old ladies in wheelchairs take their shoes off.
No, I agree with that. No more strip searches for me. I'm done with that. No, I've been led to believe by a friend who does work in the airline industry that I am on the no-fly list, so I've not even attempted, because the way they've got it structured, of course, is you can pay for your ticket, but you ain't getting on the plane. So it's like, hey, that's all I need to do is, you know, spend my $300 or more to fly somewhere and, of course, never get there and lose that money. I can't afford that. So now I imagine you are probably on the no-fly list as well.
You see, yeah. I was speaking in England and Japan and all of the United States. And that all came to a sudden end with the war on terror. And I do have some meetings coming up this year, but generally I've been pretty much on the sidelines looking in on the party.
Yeah, well, I hope that you don't encounter any problems. But you have been doing this for exactly how long?
60 years.
60 years.
Yeah,
that's
82
amazing.
Today, as a matter of fact.
Is it today?
Yes.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
Outstanding.
That's a good way to use my birthday on your program.
Well, I certainly am honored to have you here on your 82nd birthday. That's great. That's a long time, Eustace, to devote to this.
Well, it's longer than I intended.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I know that, you know, I was just talking about, I was ranting and raving about how it sometimes it feels like there's no, there's never anything coming out of it. Sometimes it feels like I'm just talking to myself out here, and it just, it really just, well, it pisses me off. So, you know, at the same time, you know, it's like, well, that's it, I quit. I know that I can't quit. You can't ever sort of go back to sleep. You can't unhear something. You can't unknow something. So as a result of that, I'm sure that, you know, I probably won't be destined for this job for very long, because I do know that the message will become increasingly less and less popular and allowed, you know, legality-wise. So, you know, I anticipate that this is a, you know, a guerrilla type of radio program where we'll be here for a little while, and then I'll disappear, or the show will disappear, something like that. But 60 years, how did you keep motivated? How did you, you know, keep enduring all this? Because,
well, I guess that's incurable optimism. You see, I had the wonderful example of my mentor, Ezra Pound, who was locked up in an insane asylum. So in my darkest days, I've never had to endure what he did, 13 and a half years imprisonment without trial.
Hang on a second here, Eustace. I'm sorry. We got a break coming up, but
all right.
I just lost track of time here because I'm enjoying this so much. Folks, stay with us. More brilliance from our guest today, the legendary Eustace Mullins. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Good morning, folks, and welcome back. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio, and I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Glad to have you aboard with us here today. My guest is Eustace Mullins. Eustace, welcome back. When I had to interrupt you there, and I apologize, you were just talking about your origins and your mentor, Ezra Pound.
Ezra Pound, yeah. He's the only person I know of who was denied jury trial for 13 and a half years while he was in prison. It's really the same thing that's happening in Guantanamo today with the terrorists that they've got imprisoned down there. And just what terrorist acts these people have committed, no one seems to know, because they've never faced trial and they don't have a lawyer. And they're being denounced by Bill O'Reilly, who thinks it's terrible to talk about having lawyers for terrorists. But the fact is, if you go before the federal government, you should have a lawyer of some kind. I've represented myself before the United States Court of Claims, the United States Tax Court, and I've had various degrees of success. But the important thing is that I was willing to go in there, not knowing what I was. The IRS, I went before U.S. Tax Court, and the IRS was claiming a deficiency on my part, and they refused to send any of their lawyers to U.S. Tax Court. So I went there prepared for a big court battle, and there was nobody there. So the judge of the U.S. Tax Court, the chief judge, Judge Theodore Tannenwald, gave me a letter stating that I had no tax deficiency, which you would think would cost you a lot of money for a lawyer to get a deal like that.
Sure.
But it didn't cost me a penny. I even had friends drive me to Richmond, where we had the hearing. And the judge was very fair and gave me a letter stating I had no tax deficiency. And now the IRS is after me again because I just recently began to brood it about that the IRS has no right to collect income taxes for a privately owned bank, which is in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, which removes the IRS and the Department of Treasury as fiscal agents of the United States government and replaces it with the Federal Reserve System, a private bank. So this puts IRS in sort of a difficult position. They're collecting money for a private bank. Well, if you owed a private bank money, they shouldn't have to send the U.S. government to collect the money for you.
No doubt. No doubt at all. Now, who owns the Federal Reserve? Because, you know, I've been told it's some groups. I've been told it's others. Any idea?
Oh, well, that's well known who owns it, because it's the member banks own all the stock, and it's a monopoly because in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, they established a monopoly by stating that no Federal Reserve stock could be bought or traded or sold on any stock market in the world, and it never has been. It's been a monopoly since its inception in 1914, and it still is. So why is the government involved in this monopoly? No one seems to know.
It's an excellent, excellent point. You know, we've got so much going on in the world, and it all does tend to seem to follow, you know, you follow the money, you'll find all the corruption that you want, or maybe even some stuff you had no idea about. You know, where do you see this all as the intent of the whole New World Order agenda? I mean, obviously we know that certain things have to be accomplished, but I mean, ultimately, is it control? Is it money? Is it power?
Well, it's really freedom of speech and the right to debate these issues openly. And, of course, that's what we're doing today. But this happens to be a very rare occasion in this country. You know, there has been only one national television show on the Federal Reserve System since its inception, and that appeared on Martin Downey's show about 15 years ago. And a friend of mine got me on, and we talked about the Federal Reserve System. And the next day, all of Martin Downey's advertising contracts for the next fall season were canceled, and he was out of business for good.
Oh,
he
wow.
He had another show.
How about that?
So I felt guilty about it because I knew what might happen, and it did happen, but Martin Downey was riding high. He was the greatest thing on television at that time.
Well,
and
you
he died alone and broke.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a... Wow. I had no idea. Yeah, this stuff does not get addressed. You know, I listen to mostly talk radio stations all over the place. And, you know, there's a financial show that comes out on the weekend, and I don't recall exactly who the host is. It's dry for the most part. But occasionally, the call screeners are not on their toes, and somebody gets in and said, I just want to talk about this Federal Reserve System. And all of a sudden, you know, the insults start getting hurled, the name-calling, conspiracy theorists, and you're just one of those wackos, and so on and so forth. It's amazing because these people just show absolutely no tolerance of that subject.
Oh, they scream over the phone.
Yeah.
I heard them scream over the phone. Screaming at me, mostly. But they call me a conspiratologist. That's what they... I get a lot of press plays, and I get front-page stories on the Daily News denouncing me as a conspiratologist. And I replied that I never had to invent a conspiracy in my life because I had more conspiracies to keep up with than I could keep up with now.
Yeah, there's plenty of truth out there. We don't have to make anything up.
We certainly don't.
I've been accused of the same thing. I've been accused of actually somehow having the web, I guess, savviness to go in and fabricate a fake, like, CNN website with the fake graphics and the fake logos and the fake script, text and the fake photographs and the fake headlines. And I'm just blown away that can be their defense. And it's just so outlandish and ridiculous to think that I have that kind of time or even interest in doing that. Eustace, we're coming up on another break. Stay with us, my friends. More with our guest, Eustace Mullins, when we return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Good morning, my friends, and welcome back to the show. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio, our Wednesday edition, here already in hour number 3 and about an hour and a half left in the program. Be aware of the website, franklyspeakingradio.com. You can link up there to our guest's website, eustacemullins.com. And if you have a question and you want to dial in, feel free to do so. 1-800-313-9443. Toll free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Welcome back. Of course, Eustace Mullins, we were just chatting about, you know, the kind of attempts to discredit us and so on and so forth. There's also attempts out there to, I guess, silence us and also to, you know, to just to be, I guess, an obstructionist to the way that we're able to facilitate getting things out there. I've had, you know, my equipment get shut down many times, phone lines go down, whatever, it's always something. I think for the most part we can say that this is the case, but a lot of people, until they experience it for themselves, they don't understand it. But I know that certainly in 60 years of this, you probably have endured the lion's share of this. And I want to talk a little bit about maybe some of those experiences because it needs to be out there. People need to know at what cost you have continued to persevere in getting the truth out.
Well, I have been the principal victim. My family has been the principal victim. They've encountered terrible harassment. And I personally am the only person who was ever fired from the staff of the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. for political reasons. And I filed suit in federal court. Of course, it was dismissed at a hearing. And I'm the only person who's had a book burned in Europe since 1945. My Federal Reserve book in a German edition was burned in 1955 by U.S. Ambassador James Conant, who invented the anthrax bomb to wipe out the German people on orders from Winston Churchill. And so they burned the entire edition, and I was never able to get any compensation for it. But these are things that happen all the time. Whenever I do a talk show, I never know whether the phone is going to ring yes or not. I did one yesterday, and it was supposed to be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and the phone didn't ring. And I called the broadcasting company, and they said, it's 1 o'clock Mountain Time. It's 3 o'clock your time that the show is going to be on. Well, no one had told me that. So, of course, but in many of these cases, I had one in Toronto on Sunday evening where my phone didn't ring because an intercept had been put on it. And anyone who dialed my number, my phone would ring in New York, at a phone in New York. And the people could hear the phone ringing, and they would say, why don't Mullins answer his phone? And I get indignant letters. Why don't you answer your phone? Because there's a telephone intercept on the phone occasionally when they know that I'm going to do a show. And my phone does ring. I sit here and wait for it to ring. It does ring.
Yeah, there's just so much of that out there. And, boy, I tell you what, it is a rough thing to try to go through that, because obviously they want people to feel like they're alone. They want people to feel like they have no power on their own. And really, once people feel like they're cornered like that and they feel, oh, I'm up against everything, I have to just sort of cave in. I have to submit. I have to give up. What's kept you going, and what motivates Eustace Mullins?
Well, the example of my mentors, Ezra Pound and Joe McCarthy and H.L. Hunt, and many other people. I've been very fortunate to meet some very wonderful people, and they have given me the courage to go on, because every one of them endured much more persecution than I have. So actually, I've gotten off pretty easy.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. I'm sure it hasn't been that easy. 60 years of it.
It's never been easy. It hasn't been an easy day in 50 years.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad that you're out there doing this, because it's vital that it gets out there. Now, one of the things you probably have noticed is this plethora of health-related news, and that's sort of what we've been talking about here on this program. Health is a very, very important issue for me, simply because I know, probably as you do, that if people aren't feeling good, they could care less about what's going on in the world, and that's probably why we have so many things going on. We have these vaccines, we have these injections, we have these chemtrails, we have pollutants in the water, pollutants in the soil. We have animals, our livestock, poultry and beef, all being injected with hormones. Our milk, obviously, and dairy products have hormones. This is all designed to, I think, make us a little less sharp. And I know that you have a book called Murder by Injection, talking about the American Medical Association. I would like to learn more about that, and I was wondering if maybe we could explore some of that here today.
Oh, we certainly can. In fact, Minister Farrakhan, who's considered a very outspoken black minister, is promoting this book now. He's trying to get his fellow blacks to read this book and to improve their health. This is their best line of counterattack, is to get away from all this terrible food that's hurting the black minority in this country so badly, mm-hmm. with high blood pressure, heart attacks, strokes. Sure. They're getting the whole work, and they're very overweight, and their diet is just atrocious. Well, they didn't have a diet like that in Africa, and I've seen the same thing in Hawaii. Hawaii, people are getting enormously fat now because they're eating Big Macs and milkshakes, and they're just having a ball, but they get absolutely fat as hogs, and this tears up their system. And this is happening all over the world, as a matter of fact, what they call the Coca-Colization of America. Coca-Cola really has very little to do with it. It's mostly the calories that we're introducing into our system, and our system cannot handle it.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. There's so much. And I think, again, when you're looking for the corruption, you're looking for the intent, you can follow the money. And that's certainly what we've seen here, a lot of drugs being pulled off the market, a lot of holistic options being banned, substances that people would deem helpful, like medicinal marijuana being banned. There's just so much out there, so much corruption. And I would like to know who's really, if you would, talk a little bit about the founding of the AMA and I guess what they've been doing in the time of their existence, you know, some of the
Well, the
agendas.
AMA was founded to combat holistic and naturopathic medicine in the United States, which had made the American people the healthiest people in the world. And so one of the charter planks of the AMA when it was founded in 1847 was that they would never admit to membership any naturopath or homeopath. And so they were exclusionary from the very beginning. And the AMA staggered along till about 1913, when John D. Rockefeller got into the act. He had established the greatest monopoly, the standard oil monopoly, is the greatest monopoly in the world, and he moved right into medicine. He took over the whole medical profession, mm-hmm. and he transferred the American people from homeopathic and naturopathic medicine to the German system of allopathic medicine, which requires heavy use of drugs, radical surgery, and long hospital stays. All three of which are very bad for you. They have very bad effects. And so that's John D. Rockefeller hired three brothers that worked for him, the Flexner brothers, and they developed, they revolutionized the medical system in the United States. They changed it over to allopathic medicine, and they fought chiropractic for many years until finally the chiropractic people went into court and fought them in the courts for 22 years. But chiropractors are still not allowed to practice medicine in any hospital. They can't visit any patient that they have who's in a hospital because they're not allowed to practice there, to see anybody. So it's still monopoly all the way.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Well, that is, that's fascinating. I mean, it's a great history lesson for all of us out there because I think, as I was talking about earlier, we really depend on the FDA. Okay, people say, well, I got this problem, so I'll go to my American Medical Association approved physician who will write me a prescription for a product approved by a government institution called the FDA and made by a pharmaceutical company who's in bed with all these different things. So they'll charge me an exorbitant amount of money, and of course, obviously, my health is in their best interest. Well, of course not. I mean, if you step back from it and you really realize that we're born into this system completely brainwashed, completely deceived on every level, we really have to get ourselves out of that and realize, wait a minute here, common sense, never mind the preconceived notions that we've been thrust upon us by society in the education system and our families even to a certain extent with some people, we have to step back and say, this just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And if you notice on television, the biggest thing on television used to be cars, advertisements for new cars. Now, they're advertisements for prescription drugs. And they absolutely saturate the television with advertisements for the very expensive prescription drugs. And this goes right back to the reason I wrote my book, Murder by Injection, because I picked up a book in the Library of Congress by a man named Morris Beale, and he was a sports reporter whose wife had been so mistreated in hospital that he began to look into it, and he switched from sports reporting and began to write about, he wrote a book called The Drug Trust. And I found this book in the Library of Congress, a very small, unnoticed book, and it said in there that the Rockefeller interests controlled every drug company in the United States. Well, I thought that was a very statement to be looked at, and I looked at it, and I found out it was absolutely true, and I wound up writing my book, Murder by Injection, the only history of the American Medical Association. So you get pushed into things not really intending to do them, because I was interested in medicine, but I'd been very fortunate and I'd had good health all my life. And I came from, both of my parents were brought up on farms, and they had a very healthy existence, and I inherited that. So that's why I'm still going at 82, working 7 days a week. I've never had a vacation.
That's amazing. We're very lucky to have you out there, that's for sure. Do you believe, then, that some of the drug problems that we're encountering today are manufactured, perpetrated upon the people in the interest of being able to create some brand new symptom reliever? And the flu in particular is obviously a big topic now. Bird flu, super flu, whatever you want to call it, the forthcoming inevitable pandemic, as they would have us believe. And they've got a lot of different things. They've got the Tamiflu. They've got the flu mist, the nasal spray. They went out. And again, you got to take a step back here and approach it from a common sense point of view. They're saying, hey, let's go ahead and take the most high level of at-risk people, the elderly and infants, not just children now, but infants, and let's inject them with this virus. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but yet this is a multi-billion dollar industry with things like the flu. Do you contend then that some of this is manufactured intentionally?
Well, the interesting thing about the flu shot is that every year they say we have a different type of flu, and that last year's flu shot will not work. You've got to have this year's flu shot. Well, this is a wonderful marketing tool, but what relationship it has to reality has never been proven. And the fact is that USA Today mentioned recently that the flu shots don't seem to have an effect on flu whatsoever.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, I've been following that myself. It is amazing because they're stressing a couple things, like you said, that it's not effective. It's something that has to be updated. But also that they recommend two shots per year.
I know that, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I avoid that sort of thing myself.
Oh, me too.
As a senior citizen, I am absolutely, everywhere I go, people insist, my relatives, my doctors, everybody insists that I have a flu shot. Well, I've gone through the last 5 years without even the sniffles. And so I think I'm doing all right. But they say I must have this flu shot because of my age.
Yeah.
And they go right back to the 1918 flu. And the 1918 flu, as I point out in my book, Murder by Injection, was caused by mass vaccinations, which lowered the immune system. And the victims of the 1918 flu were not elderly people. They were young men in the prime of health. They were the armies of Germany and the armies of the Allies. They were all given massive vaccinations, and they started dying like flies, and that was the 1918 pandemic.
You're absolutely correct. I'd like to read something here, if you don't mind. This is from stanford.edu. I looked this up earlier today. The headline of the article, The Influenza Pandemic of 1918. Here's what it has to say. In 2 years, this scourge ravaged the earth. A fifth of the world's population was infected. The flu is the most deadly killer of people between the ages of 20 and 40. This pattern of morbidity was unusual for influenza, which usually is a killer of the elderly and young children. It infected 20% of all Americans. An estimated 675,000 of Americans died from influenza during the pandemic, 10 times as many as in the actual World War itself. Of the U.S. soldiers who died in Europe, half of them fell to the influenza virus and not to the enemy. An estimated 43,000 servicemen mobilized for World War I died of influenza. And then it goes on to say this. It also says it killed between 20 and 40 million people. But it goes on to say this, which I thought to be really, really interesting, Eustace. It says, the influenza virus had a profound virulence with a mortality rate of 2.5% compared to the previous influenza epidemics, which were less than 0.1%. So 2.5% for the most deadly flu epidemic ever to strike mankind. Well, then I found this one from medicalnewstoday.com, Friday, January 30th, 2004. The avian virus, known as the bird flu, is said to be able to remain active in 70 degrees Celsius below zero and to have a mortality rate in humans of 75%. So quite a significant difference between 20 and 40 million people, 2.5% mortality rate to 75% with what's coming. So your information, Eustace, is very needed right now. It's very important.
Well, that's why Minister Farrakhan told his people to start reading my book.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with him.
You know, I've never advertised any of my books, and yet they've sold consistently over the years. They're not carried in bookstores, and they have never been advertised. Now, in the publishing world, this is absolutely, usually, to circulate any book, you've got to spend at least one-third of your budget on advertising to get people to read it. And I have never spent one penny on advertising, and people still buy the books. The books sell themselves, and that suits me all right, because I couldn't afford the advertising anyway.
Yeah, well, the truth, the truth is, you know, we're all addicted to it. You get a taste of it, and you have to have as much as you possibly can just to survive. We all know that we've been lied to, and we know that when we stumble across something, we're absolutely ravenous. We want to consume as much of this truth as we can. So, you know, that's a wonderful thing in that regard, because everybody's winning. You're able to keep doing what you're doing. And people are able to continue to inform themselves and get an education they can rely on, rather than, you know, of course, what comes through the public education system. Now, your books, are they available on your website?
Yes, they're on their website. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got a break coming up here, my friend, so if you hang on, we've got a lot of phone calls. People want to chat with you, so if it's okay with you, we'll take those. But, folks, the website, EustaceMullins.com, EustaceMullins. MULLINS.com, and you can go ahead and see the address he's got there for if you want to send a check or money order in the mail. You can do that and just write down which book you want, and we'll be right back. And welcome back. You are listening to Wednesday's edition of Frankly Speaking Radio, heard around the world on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Glad to have you aboard with us here today. Running out of time here in hour number three, but we still got a full hour with our guest today, Eustace Mullins. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number 1-800-313-9443. Toll free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. We'll go ahead and give out Eustace's address, how you can send him a money order if you want to request a book. If that's okay with him, of course, it's on the website, I assume it is. But we'll give that out for those who don't have a computer here a little bit later. So make sure you have that pen and pencil handy. Eustace Mullins, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Oh, yeah. The show's going very well.
Oh, yeah. You're excellent. Very easy to talk with, and I appreciate that.
The murder by injection is so important to everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. It's one of those things. We have to heal ourselves physically before we can pay attention to the mental or spiritual angle of what is going on around us. It's a vital component, and
well,
I'm thrilled that
we're born with a wonderful immune system, and most of the medical profession is dedicated to destroying or lowering our immune system.
Amazing that people will tolerate that, because I think all of us would agree. I don't think anybody has ever had completely flawless hospital or doctor experiences in their past. Everybody's had problems. And the problem is, for the most part, is that we're conditioned not to ask questions from anyone, from our politicians, from our our teachers, our law enforcement officers. But certainly, God forbid you ask a doctor a question.
Oh, gosh, a doctor will not tell you anything.
Oh, no. I mean, they treat you very condescendingly. I've been thrown out of every hospital in town, Eustace.
Well, your files are sacrosanct. No one can look and see what's wrong with this guy, you know?
Yeah.
You can't inquire into those files.
Oh, you can't look at your own file.
Oh, no, not at all.
It's like, wait a minute here. That's my information.
It's really a matter of business. It's because of the insurance companies don't want anybody to get that information.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Who knows what sort of secret comments and things have been written in your file? Because obviously, they can do that. They can write anything in there they want. They can write, well, Eustace Mullins is addicted to drugs. Please do not treat him.
I went into the hospital a few years ago into the emergency room with a very painful kidney stone attack. And so the emergency room next, when I was rolled in, the emergency room nurse asked me, she said, are you the one that wrote that book?
Oh, wow.
And she didn't say the title, but I knew very well she was talking about it, and I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah. You're messing with her income there, Eustace.
Well, I had another unfortunate experience at a hospital here a couple years ago, and I came out of there with a terrible cyst right next to my heart, a big swollen polyoidal cyst right next to my heart, which had to be cut out. And I came down with a disease that affected my facial nervous system. And I came out with a number of things. I came out with these things from the hospital. I didn't have them when I went in. So somebody was trying to help me along there.
Isn't that nice? Not surprising at all. I mean, hospitals are where people get worse. You know, there were people contract new things.
They can bury their mistakes, so nobody is having an investigation.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And no complaints.
Yeah, and I've filed complaints before, and I've gone through the little proper procedures. And like I said, I'm the reason why they have those security guards in the hospital. I always get thrown out. They chase me away and threaten to call the police. And I'm like, I just asked a question. This is a banishment-worthy offense here. It's unbelievable.
Niece was a X-ray technician, and she got into trouble with her employers because they were doing some shady deals, and they threw her out, and they tried to have her barred from the hospital.
Oh, geez. Hold on a second here, Eustace. We've got a quick break coming up here, and we'll come back at the top of the hour, my friends. Stay tuned. More with Eustace Mullins. We will go to the phones as well, so be patient. We'll be right back. Good morning, folks. Good morning and welcome to Frankly Speaking Radio, heard around the world on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Frank Whelan, into our fourth and final hour, the fastest moving radio program in talk show history. Boy, I'll tell you what, having a lot of fun here today. Be sure to check out the website, EustaceMullins.com. You can link up through our website, www.franklyspeakingradio.com. And the phone number, in case I haven't beat it into your skulls enough, is 1-800-313-9443. Toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Our guest today, of course, the legendary Eustace Mullins. Thank you so much for your time today, my friend.
Oh, I'm glad to be on.
Well, good. I'm enjoying it myself. You were just talking about your niece?
They tried to bar her from coming back into the hospital where she had worked for years. She finally went to work at the hospital about 25 miles away.
Jeez. They always have their little tricks and antics. And this is part of the problem that most people have been conditioned to fear doctors. I respect everybody. When they're good at what they do, give them their due respect. But using fear and intimidation and some sort of arrogance as in to say, I went to school longer than you, which makes me more intelligent. My response instantaneously would be, you spent more time in the brainwashing system than I did, which makes me more intelligent than you. So,
in my book, Murder by Injection, I give full credit to three people, Dr. Goldenson and Morris Beal and Dr. Robert Mendelson. Now, all three of these men happen to be Jewish, which I didn't even know at the time. I knew Dr. Goldenson, and I was on the podium a number of times with Robert Mendelson. And when Robert Mendelson suddenly died, he was doing national television shows, and he was getting to be quite a big influence. And he was a member of the AMA. He was an accredited medical doctor, but he was tearing them apart. And so at the age of 56, he suddenly dropped dead of a heart attack. And people started calling me up right away. They say, Eustace, who killed Robert Mendelson? I say, I didn't do it. That's all I know.
You narrow it down a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
Before we go to these phone calls, and I want to talk a little bit about AIDS, because I know that is one of the subjects there in your book. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is this another man-made creation designed for population control?
Well, I think so. These so-called pandemics, which sweep the whole world, have to have somebody and some point of origin. Somebody has to get them going, and they do get going, and they sweep the world. And the best thing you can do is protect yourself against them by finding out exactly what is going on, who is doing what to whom. And that is the big problem, is trying to pin it down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Following the chain. It's a scary, scary situation. And folks, make no mistake, when you look at this, you know, you were just talking earlier when we opened up the show about, you know, people's rights and Guantanamo and how these interrogation tactics are happening. It's of my opinion that there will be another manufactured terrorist attack on U.S. soil, but I do think it'll come in the form of biological terror because the infrastructure won't be crippled. The economy can still function. We'll be put into these quarantine camps, and we'll still be allowed to work, and that's how we'll get our food rations. You can go ahead and pull anybody off any street or out of any job or out of any business, no matter what they might be doing, because they can say our air sniffers have detected a biological outbreak. And then, of course, they go, and who knows what the hell an air sniffer is? It's nonsense. So then they go and they round up the troublemakers like yourself and myself, Eustace, and then they say, oh, you know, we've tested all your coworkers and they appear to be fine. You, however, have contracted something, so we're going to have you come with us where we give you our forced vaccination, and we're going to have to go and microchip you so we can encounter who you interact with, how far you spread this contagion, and so on and so forth. And then ultimately, if something happens, an accident, we'll get cremated because you don't want the contagion to spread, so there's no autopsy going to be done. Eustace, hang on a second here. Quick break, my friends. We'll be right back. My friends, and welcome back. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio, and I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome aboard the website, www.franklyspeakingradio.com. I'll have a link there to our guest today, his website. And again, we'll give out his address for those who don't have a computer, so make sure you do have that pen and paper handy. We'll be doing that soon. If you got questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, death threats even, all welcome. 1-800-313-9443. And let's bring back our guest, Eustace Mullins. Thank you again so much for your time today. I just sort of outlined a scenario that I think highlights how important your book is, Murder by Injection, and among all of your books. But I really think this is a way they can angle this in, complete and total control of every angle, you know, media, the freedom to walk about where we'd like to go, the freedom to speak freely, the freedom to not be forced into a draft. I think they can really accomplish so much good with just a biological outbreak. And it doesn't even have to be real. They could just make it up.
Oh, I know. And the fact is, when I read that babies 6 weeks old have six major vaccinations, and I just think of those little babies getting these enormous amounts of toxin pumped into their little bodies, and what are they starting life out like that? And in my book, Murder by Injection, I quote a doctor, a practicing medicine for many years, who said, I never found a case of cancer in a person who had not been vaccinated.
That's something right there.
Well, that's a practice by a doctor who had been practicing for 30 years, and this was his experience.
Wow.
And that really tells you something.
You know, I had somebody tell me the other day that you can take a home pregnancy test and, you know, follow the instructions. Even if you're a male, you can go ahead and use that. And if it comes up positive for pregnancy, that actually means that you're not pregnant, that you have cancer. And for women who do a pregnancy test, if you're not pregnant and it looks like a positive, that false positive is indicative of cancer. So people need to pay attention to these things. Eustace, you're probably like me. You want people to empower themselves to, you know, find their answers and whatnot. So I think it needs to be stressed how important that is. But that is a devastating revelation right there. And I hope anyone who, you know, is contemplating vaccinating their kids looks into that.
Well, a lot of parents are not vaccinating their kids. In fact, I participated in a seminar at the University of Virginia about 5 years ago, in which a friend of mine came from Santa Fe, and he's written a book about vaccination. And he warned people not to vaccinate their children. And there were young mothers there who agreed with him. And so people are concerned, and they want to do something about it.
Well, I agree, my friend. I agree. And people, there are options. There are different sort of exemptions, philosophical, religious, and so on and so forth. But I strongly encourage you to do your homework before you condemn your children and sentence them to a life of dealing with, again, as Eustace had just stated, cancer perhaps, autism. It's very, very suspect. I had an email, Eustace, from a gal who listens to the show here locally, and she told me about her autistic child.
Oh, autism. I've run it all over the country. I've seen
sure.
autistic children.
Well, she was telling me about it, and she said if you think about the different traits of an autistic child versus a normal child, normal is not really the best way to phrase it because it sounds somewhat insulting, but you know what I mean, autistic versus non-autistic, if you will. The traits of an autistic child lend themselves very much to loyalty to the person who takes care of them, the ability to do what they're told, to focus themselves completely and totally to a task, foregoing any and all, you know, distractions. Usually expertise, far superior to anyone else's in a specific area, and an extra amount of strength, you know, stronger than the average person. So what she was saying is that if they're vaccinating all these kids, it's possible they're trying to go ahead and get people into this, autistic, have them, you know, contract this autism for the explicit purpose of being able to have a sort of little army going here of people who can be.
Oh, yeah, it's part of the program.
Yeah, exactly. It was amazing. I had never considered it before, but, you know, there you go. That's amazing.
Well, every investigation of the cause of autism has absolutely cleared vaccination as being of no consequence whatsoever, and they've had about 8 investigations of this because people still clamor, is autism being caused by vaccination? And so they have these investigations, and they solemnly report that we find absolutely no evidence that vaccination causes autism.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Eustace, did you want to take some phone calls?
Yes, indeed.
All right, folks, I'm turning it over to you. 1-800-313-9443, toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Harold in Tennessee, welcome to the program.
Hey, Frank.
How are you, sir?
How are you, Mr. Mullins, doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, just fine. I was raised up several years ago, and when I went to school, I didn't get none of them vaccinations. And I never caught the mumps, chicken pox, measles, or nothing. And I slept with them and ate with them. And then I never did get no vaccinations or shots until I went to service.
Oh, the service really hit you there.
Yeah.
I've seen guys collapse in the vaccination line when I was in the Air Force.
Oh, they was fighting like the devil.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, they were dropping like flies, like you said.
They certainly were.
But other than that, I've never had any vaccinations. And my wife, she took and went and bought one of these prescription books that tells all the prescriptions, the effects and the benefits of them. And if people read that book, they would not take a prescription.
They certainly wouldn't.
Because they cause more troubles than they help.
Well, they have the warnings on all the prescription medicine now, but it's in such fine print, nobody can read it.
Yeah, that's like that box here they advertised a real big not long ago on television.
Oh, yes.
And all these people, every time they advertise something, they got to run to the doctor and then to the drugstore and get that junk. I mean, people, and you can't tell them about it. They're so hard-headed, they're dumb, or whatever you call them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I call these petrochemical prescriptions because it's a byproduct of the Standard Oil oil monopoly.
Mm-hmm. But they're so dumb you can't tell them that it's going to hurt them.
That's
well,
true.
They listen to their doctors. My sister would never refuse to me. She did now. But she never would pay any attention to me. She said, how could you write a book about medicine? You're not a doctor. And so she wouldn't read it. So she suffered from doctors and crippling arthritis all of her life and all sorts of things. I tried to help her. And the first thing I told her to do is stop drinking the city fluoridated water. And she said, well, if that would help me, I'm sure my doctor would have told me to do that.
Well, if a doctor tells them something like that, they'll get disbarred from the medical association.
Well, no doctor's going to tell you that. In fact, her doctor told me to drink 8 glasses of fluoridated water a day. He gave me a doctor's command to do that, which, of course, I didn't do.
Yeah, it's like me. The doctor tell me to do something, I do just the opposite. I'm kind of hard-headed. And a little smarter than he is.
But without
he's
a doubt.
To survive. He's not.
Yeah. He's trying to make money.
Yeah, he's making a living.
Yeah, he's going to be raptured off, he thinks.
Well, he'll be ready for it.
Yeah, but them folks that think they're going to be raptured off going to get a rude awakening.
They certainly are. It's going to be pretty hot.
Yeah. But and they think they're going to heaven, and they ain't read the Bible. Or other words, they know that Jesus is coming back to this earth.
With me.
Which it plainly states in Revelation.
Well, Jesus said in Matthew 29, he said, I am with you always.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not waiting for him to come back because Jesus is here.
Yeah, and he said in John 3 that no man has ascended into heaven yet.
Uh-huh.
So, and if there was going to be a rapture, well, he wouldn't come back to earth, would he?
No, indeed. He'd bring us to him.
Yeah, and but he's coming back to us.
Well, I tell you, the preachers make a lot of money out of that.
Oh, yeah, preachers and politicians and law enforcement are the three richest occupations you can get into.
Well, I went to college with Pat Robertson, and the last I heard he was making $5 million a week.
Woo!
Which
wow.
is more than I make, I must say.
Yeah.
$5 a week more than I'm making. Yeah, but I don't want to be hitting his shoes when the day comes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm happy being here talking with Frank and you, Mr. Buggins.
Yes, indeed. This is our mission.
Harold.
Right here on Earth.
Yes. Wisdom there. I appreciate it, as always, my friend.
Okay, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk to you.
Harold, God bless you, buddy.
And we'll talk to you folks later.
Oh, yeah, without
okay.
a doubt.
Bye-bye.
Very good.
Take care. Let's go to Dan in Texas. Dan, welcome to the show.
Top of the morning to you, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
Mr. Mullins, I'd appreciate hearing your views on within the context of the Federal Reserve System and our debt-driven economy and the current move toward the bankruptcy laws to make it more difficult for the debtors to react to the problem and the Social Security changes.
Hang on a second, Eustace. Dan, stay with us as well. Folks, quick break. We'll be right back with more Frankly Speaking Radio. Stay with us. Good morning, my friends, and welcome back. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome back to the show. My guest today is a legend, my friends. 60 years of research that he's been putting into this, exposing the truth, and it certainly makes all of us look like infants out there. And we're pleased to have him with us here today. Eustace Mullins, welcome back to the show. Dan of Texas, also welcome back. You just posed some really good questions, and I'd like to take them one at a time, if you don't mind.
Yes, it's just the noose is getting tighter, Frank.
Oh, yeah.
With this action they're looking at taking on the bankruptcy reform.
Absolutely.
The Social Security reform.
Yep. We were talking about that earlier because I do think that ties in with the cost of the medical industry. I do think that since most bankruptcies originate with medical bills,
and
either
the,
for.
and then the tort reform.
Oh, yeah.
That dovetails right into it. I'd appreciate Mr. Mullins' views on those.
Eustace, that's an excellent question. What are your thoughts on these things?
Well, reform, unfortunately, is something to be upset about because, you know, they cut the Federal Reserve Act through in 1913 as banking reform. And with the Federal Reserve Act, they seized control of all the money and credit of the people of the United States and have had it ever since. And we've become a debtor nation all over the world. And we had no debt in 1913 when the Federal Reserve Act was enacted into law.
And then, Mr. Mullins, do you have any views on this current bankruptcy reform they're looking at and the Social Security reform Bush is looking at and how that fits into the debtor nation prospect?
I'm not familiar with the details of that bankruptcy act and so forth. I do know that the privatization of Social Security, I get a Social Security check myself. I've gotten one for 20 years. And so I'm concerned about it, but I really don't know what to do about it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very complex, and it's hard to figure out. I'm sure you'll agree, Dan. It's hard to figure out who's lying to us more, you know, on which side of this issue we should fall. But those are excellent questions, my friend. I appreciate it. I'm glad that that people out there are paying attention. It gives me confidence, gives me some heart here. So.
Thanks, Frank. Y'all have a good day.
You too, buddy. Take care. Back to the phones. And again, my friends, the number 1-800-313-9443. Ted in Georgia, welcome to the program, sir.
Mr. Mullen, I have a question for you concerning the CDC and the National Immunization Program. However, I first have a bone to pick with Frank. He made it sound a moment ago as though air sniffers were something sinister. And I happen to
as
be
though
one.
What was sinister?
Air sniffers.
Oh, air sniffers. I didn't make it.
I happen to be an air sniffer, and I resent that. I suspect you might be one, too.
I have been known to sniff some air on occasion. My biggest contention with it is that they claim that they have these things. But we don't know. It's just like anything else. It's not possible to have accountability with certain things like that, much like the enemy combatant status. It's like if you're an enemy combatant, all of a sudden, you know, you've got this Jose Padilla guy. I don't know Jose Padilla. I don't care much about Jose Padilla, but I do know that the fact is that he is being held as a perpetrator of a thought crime. He didn't actually do anything, and he's being held as an enemy combatant. I have a problem with that because that can be applied to any of us. So looking at this air sniffer, I think I saw it it was either a cat litter commercial or a laundry detergent commercial. It was a nose on the end of a stick, and they were waving it around the litter box, and it was, you know, expanding, contracting, looking like it was sniffing things. And I'm saying, that's the only air sniffer I know of, and in regards to that, I don't know how they're made, who makes them, or how to, sort of employ a checks and balances system against these air sniffers to be sure that our government is being truthful to us. That's it. But you're right. I confess, I'm coming out of the closet, Ted. I'm an air sniffer.
there was an article in Sunday's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The CDC is located here, and they're talking about they've had a three-year reorganization. And one of the statements in the article, I haven't read the whole thing, but says one official said that for many employees, it's gone from dedication to make, one controversial change, for example, moves responsibility for vaccine safety out of the National Immunization Program. Now, that's an item that I thought that Mr. Mullins would be interested in.
Well, I certainly am. The CDC is a very important thing. I mentioned in my book, Murder by Injection, that the CDC managed to defeat General President Ford for re-election and elect Jimmy Carter from Plains, Georgia, which was a neighbor of the CDC. And the swine flu massacre was totally conjured out of nothing, and it resulted in Ford getting sucked into it, and he wound up losing an election. So it's not a trivial substitute by any means.
Do you know anything about the reorganization of the CDC?
No, I do not. It's a very secretive organization. I know more about the FDA than the CDC because the FDA is constantly in the news, but you don't see much about the CDC and how it operates and who's in it and so forth.
That's an absolute truth. Let me get you to hang on here, Ted, and Eustace right. as well. Quick break, my friends. Come right back in just a few minutes, and we'll continue with the phone calls until the end of the hour when the show, unfortunately, must pass into history. So stay with us. Be a part of the show while you have the time. We'll be right back with more Frankly Speaking Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Good morning and welcome back to the show, my friends. We call it Frankly Speaking Radio, and I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Our guest today, a legend. His name is Eustace Mullins. He's been he's been doing all the hard work so that way people like us can stand on his shoulders and try to learn more, I guess you could say, with all of his great foundational work. It's an honor and privilege to have him here with us, and I know I'm enjoying this, and I hope you are as well. Eustace Mullins, welcome back to the show. And Ted from Georgia, you were just inquiring about the CDC, and it's amazing, truly, to understand the CDC. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know they have a lot of revealing documents at their website, such as their SARS preparedness plan, and you can certainly see that in the interests of a national emergency, any sort of health crisis, the CDC, you know, with the power of FEMA, of course, can just basically do whatever they want. It's kind of frightening.
According to this article, CDC is undergoing a political change, and of course it was already political, and it's undergoing I suppose a neocon type of political change, and I don't think neither of them is probably too beneficial to the ideas that we believe in, but it's something to look out for, and I repeat again for Mr. Mullins' benefit that the vaccination safety is being transferred out of the National Immunization Program. I wanted to ask Mr. Mullins if he has any insights on the assassination of Huey Long.
Oh, that's one of the great crimes in America. You know, Huey Long was the most popular politician in the United States. The only person who became more popular than Huey Long was Joe McCarthy when he attacked the communists. And which were, of course, headquartered in Washington, D.C., so that was high treason on his part. And so you get these things happening in Washington. I know that I was good friends with Congressman Wright Patman, chairman of the Banking and Currency Committee, and before him was Louis McFadden, was chairman of the Banking and Currency Committee. And Louis McFadden was poisoned at a political banquet. He brought us some food, and he ate it, and he died. And there's been a tradition in Washington that you can have one person in Washington, D.C., who can criticize the Federal Reserve System, but never more than one at a time. And this has been true over the years. You had McFadden, and then you had Wright Patman, and now you have Ron Paul of Texas. And there's always one person in Washington who will criticize the Federal Reserve, but never more than one.
There was do you remember Burns when he was chairman of the Fed?
Yes.
He was quoted back about 1976, possibly 1974, 1976. He was quoted. I think Patman had the pressure on him to get the Federal Reserve audited.
Oh, yes. He was the person who started that.
And Burns was quoted as saying if the Federal Reserve was audited, and I don't have the documentation on this, but if Burns said if the Federal Reserve was ever audited, he said there would be he practically said there'd be a revolution in this country.
Oh, there certainly would, because that's the key of all the corruption.
Do you have that quote? I mean, are you familiar?
No, I don't have that. I never saw that quote. I know about Bart Burns' work. Burns was I'm surprised he would say that because he was pretty careful in his public comments, as all the chairmen of the Federal Reserve Board have been, as Greenspan is in that tradition. He talks a great deal and says very little.
Well, I think they had the pressure on him to cause him to say that.
Oh, yes, they must
have.
He had
a great deal of pressure. In other words, at that particular moment.
Yeah, it was probably approved because he didn't say anything that wasn't approved.
Right, right. Okay, well, those are my comments, and I do thank you. And I do want to speak up again on behalf of the ass sniffers. Have a nice day.
Ted, God bless, buddy. I appreciate the call, as always. Wonderful insight there. Bill in Illinois, welcome to the show.
Hello, good morning, Eustace. Good morning, Frank.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Eustace, I have three of your books, and I want to just tell everybody to buy them, because they are excellent, high-quality books. And a couple questions. For one thing, Curse of Canaan, that was my favorite because I thought that was an excellent history lesson. But going back to the Secrets of the Federal Reserve, on that book cover you feature an eagle, Eustace, and it has five arrows. What does that mean?
Oh, that's the Rothschilds. That's the five Rothschilds that took over the world.
The five sons.
Yes, the five sons.
Right. That's what I figured it was. See how smart I am?
You know, in the 1800s, when the Rothschilds were sweeping over the world, there was a tremendous outcry against them with cartoons and papers and articles attacking them and books and so forth. And gradually, all those were eliminated, and you never heard any more about the Rothschilds.
Mm. My next question. In the curse, well, not actually a question, it's a comment, because in your book, The Curse of Canaan, which you talk about the French Revolution and tell a story that I have never heard or seen before anywhere, and then again you talk about the Bolshevik Revolution and about the people, the places, the agents, the money, the methodology of this. One of the things that I saw or I see coming right now is more or less the facilities to have that happen again in this country, the law changes.
For the same agencies that always worked inside. You know, the British Secret Service actually perpetrated the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. The Russians had nothing to do with it, or very little to do with it.
Right. But you talked about, extensively about secular humanism, and you talked about the absolute unrestrained brutality and depravity that they use more or less in the process of these upheavals. And what I see right now is people talk about neocons all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't look at them as neocons. I look at these guys as basically neo-Bolsheviks.
Well, they are. There's the Straussian conspiracy, it's being called now, after Professor Leo Strauss, whom John D. Rockefeller imported from Germany in 1938. And he became the leader of the neocons. All of the neocons are part of the Straussian conspiracy, and not many people know about that. There is something on the Internet about it, and it's very important to people to know who is doing what to whom.
One of the reasons why I called is that I really highly recommend that people read these books, especially The Curse of Canaan, and there's another book, Under the Sign of the Scorpion, that I think Tex Mar sells, just so you know what's coming and how fast we got to get this information out to as many people as possible. Because if these guys ever get this system up and running, we're in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yes. It's going to be slaughters all over, the massacres all over the world. And, in fact, that's been true before, like the Bolshevik Revolution, the revolution in Spain, where priests and nuns were mostly murdered in the Bolshevik Revolution in Spain. And there was such a reaction to it that Franco was able to lead Spain back into the to become a free country once again.
And there was payback for it, wasn't there?
Oh, yes.
And just like in Argentina, there was payback.
And Argentina, Perón did the same thing.
And in Chile, the same thing, the payback. And also, remember, I think you noted one time that the Russians came to our aid during the Civil War and blockaded a couple ports.
Oh, yes.
And then their reward was the murder of the entire Tsarist family.
Oh, it certainly was. Jacob Schiff of Kuhn Loeb Company, who financed the Bolshevik Revolution, led the war against Russia. He got Japan to attack Russia. He paid Japan to attack Russia in 1905, and it almost caused the collapse of the Tsar at that time, but he survived for a few more years.
Eustace, I want to thank you for what you've done, your tremendous efforts, and truthfully, it's your history and the things that you tell are something that everybody should know so they can read what's happening now. Thank you.
Amen Thank to you. That. Bill, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. It's wonderful questions. And I think he makes a great point, Eustace, about how important your books are. I mean, you've done so much work. Not only should we be obligated to read these books, but at the same time, you have a lot of years into this, and why not? People should definitely read the books, and then if they want to angle their own personal investigations in a certain direction, they have the strongest possible foundation to do
well,
so.
Well, I always encourage people to do that themselves. Don't accept my books. Go investigate them for yourselves. But I do think this information might save your life at some point in the future.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
If you don't know what's going on, you're just going to go down with everybody else.
Well said. Well, we're getting, we still have more calls to get into, but I would like to give out your address if that's okay with you, or you can give it out. Is it the one on the website? This is a good address for people to send a money order or something to you?
Oh,
yes. Books?
That's the address. Just send it right in, and we'll take care of the book.
Okay.
Now, some of my books are out of print right now. Curse of Canaan and My Life in Christ and several others are out of print, but I'm getting those reprinted in the near future.
Very good. So we'll give that out here. Of course, Eustace Mullins, 1247 Mount MT, period, Torrey, T-O-R-R-E-Y, Road, Lyndhurst, L-Y-N-D-H-U-R-S-T, Virginia, which is V-A, 22952. And there you have it. If you missed it, folks, again, it's available on the website, EustaceMullins.com. And if you couldn't do that, you just give me a call or give Matt a call, and we'll make sure that we get that to you, okay? Eustace, I'd like to take a few more calls here if we've got time, if that's all right with you.
All right, fine.
Wonderful. Rick in Tennessee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank.
Of course.
Frank, I can tell you a little bit about air sniffers. I've worked construction and done factory work.
Oh, okay.
It's a device that... It's a little bigger than a pocket tape recorder. They'll have you clip it to your belt or to your galluses or something. And then later, they'll some, quote, scientist or doctor or something will come out and take a reading of how many parts of a certain diameter fiber is in the air or a certain diameter grit or whatever is in the air. For instance, asbestos is 0.02 mils. It don't matter if it's a piece of a decaying bug leg or whatever. If it's 0.02 mils, it's legally asbestos in the air. You still there?
Yeah, I'm just processing.
And so they could figure out what diameter a certain virus is supposed to be. And if something is in there that matches that diameter, then they'll say it's that particular virus or that particular bacteria or whatever. It just measures the particulate or this particle size of dust.
So in essence, what you're saying here is it just basically it samples the air, and then until that sample has been processed, this biological attack that might be going on could go on for as long as it takes to check the sample.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I don't feel any safer.
But and also, you were talking a while ago about vaccination, and this just occurred to my perverted hillbilly mind. Couldn't folks save a whole lot of money besides saving themselves, getting mercury in their blood and everything, if whenever they wanted a vaccination to a certain flu or something, they just went over to a buddy's house that had that particular flu or that had the flu, and just scrape their arm real good with a good sharp bird knife or cut themselves a little bit and have them drool all over it. Save themselves a whole lot of money, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I would think so.
The doctors wouldn't get any money out of that.
That's true. Or, depending, maybe you can find a good sick friend of the opposite sex and just, get a nice big kiss out of it.
Yeah, so, big lip lock.
Yeah. Well, God bless your perverted hillbilly mind.
Have a good one.
Yeah, Rick.
Bye-bye.
That's fantastic. Thanks. Mike in Kentucky, welcome to the show.
Wow, great to talk to Eustace Mullins. I tried reading your book, The World Order, a few years back, and I appreciate the title because I don't think there's anything new about it. Everybody talks about the New World Order nowadays, but my brother-in-law loaned me a copy of it. And
You know, President Bush went on the air, I think, in while he was president, and talked about the New World Order, and my book sold out, and I had to reprint it, and the second printing sold out because I had the President of the United States blogging my book.
Well, of course, you know, you've got your critics out there, and I wanted one thing, a couple of topics I want to touch on real quick, but is the critics that say that the profits of the Federal Reserve go to the federal government, whatever hundreds of millions it is a year, goes directly back into the general fund of the federal government. And that says nothing about the profits of the private banks.
That's right, they're owned by private banks.
Yeah, each Federal Reserve District Bank is owned by its member banks. But the system itself does make a profit, and that goes back to the federal government. But from what I've seen, the figures don't seem very large at all, you know, $197 million or something.
Oh, they're tiny figures. They have nothing to do with the national debt because the national debt has continued to grow astronomically ever since 1913.
Well, a while ago you talked about Pat Robertson making $5 million a week.
Well, that was what he was making about 20 years ago. I have no idea what he's making now.
Well,
he has this empire down in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
There's a fairly infamous picture of him with doing one of the Masonic or Secret Society lion's paws.
Oh, that was on the cover of Time Magazine.
Yeah, Time Magazine. So he's a member of this, you know,
intergalactic
elite or whatever.
Well, his father was chairman of the Senate Banking and Currency Committee, you know.
Okay.
Senator Willis Robertson. So he's in a great tradition there. He's right in.
And a lot of those symbols have a dual mode meaning, like the lion-hearted or whatever. A lot of people would probably say that that lion's paw thing was sort of a Christian overtones to maybe the Old Testament or something.
Now they'd be wrong.
They'd be wrong. That's what I. Now you had mentioned earlier. It sounded like you've got a pretty good attitude about the rapture, Mr. Mullins. I was wondering if you'd studied preterism at all and some of the time statements taken.
No, I used to lecture with a Baptist minister who was a great authority on the rapture. I had never heard what a phony system this was until I lectured with him down in Missouri. And he gave me the whole story.
But have you studied like what I see is more of a recent comeback of preterism that died out in the early 1800s, where we take a lot, if not all, of the time statements literal, like you mentioned before, he's in his kingdom now, and you know, basically the prophecies of the New Testament came true in 70 A.D. Have you looked at that, looking at the Bible with a more of a perspective of the day that it was written?
I haven't had that much of a student of the Bible because most of my life has been involved in researching a crime. I've been a criminal investigator.
And what was the guy's name that originally got you, gave you some of this information that led you to write the book, the books back, way back, you know, 60 years
ago? Oh, Dr. Goldenson and Dr. Robert Mendelson and Morris Beale. They were all three Jewish, and so I'm always described as a rabid anti-Semite because I gave credit to these three Jewish people for getting me onto this book.
They gave you the information.
Oh, yes, indeed.
They got you. They woke you up, in other words.
These were real fighters. These guys, Goldenson was finally drummed out of the American Medical Association, and Dr. Mendelson died very suddenly of a strange heart attack. And so it's not an easy life by any means.
Well, if you could republish the New World Order, or the World Order, put some more charts in there to make it a little easier to follow.
Yes, I'm going to get that out. That's on my current agenda.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. Folks, we're going to come right back from this break. We'll get another call in here if we can, and we'll wrap up with our interview with the legend, Eustace Mullins. Stay with us, my friends. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. The dwindling moments here of our interview with our good friend Eustace Mullins. Eustace, welcome back to the show. So thrilled and honored to have you here with us today. I'm going to take one last call here quickly. Rodney in Texas, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, it's a privilege to speak with you, Mr. Mullins.
I'm glad to be on.
Yes, sir. I ordered a book recently. I haven't gotten it yet, but it was a book written by your mentor, Ezra Pound. Called The ABCs of Reading. Is that the exact title?
Oh, that's one of his basic books, yes.
Yeah, can you give me a brief synopsis on what that book is about and tell me how I might benefit from reading it?
Well, you can benefit by reading it. You see, Ezra was a poet, not a prose writer, and so his reading is a little hard. His prose is a little hard to get through, but you'll find the book tries to deal with the basics of reading and of having a good attitude towards it.
All right. Well, sir, you just keep up the good work. I think that you're a living library, and I just hope and pray to God continue to bless you in your endeavors.
Well, thank you very much.
You keep up the good work, too.
Rodney, God bless, buddy. excellent, excellent points. Eustace, we're coming up on the end of the program here, and it sure has gone by quickly. If you would, maybe leave us with some idea of maybe if you, let's say you're at the front of the classroom, because that you are a teacher, whether you would like that role or not, it's been thrust upon you because you have so much information. Let's say that you're standing there in front of the class, maybe a graduating class, and you want to turn us loose on the world. What angle would you suggest people go? What would you like to see investigated by the next crop of avid researchers and writers out there?
Well, the avid researchers overlook one important thing about America. The individual is the foundation of America. And so all of these mass movements and so forth, there's a book called Albion Seed, written by a professor at Brandeis University, which says that only 160,000 people really spark plugged the American Revolution. It was not a mass movement of any kind. There were 60,000 pilgrims and Puritans, and there were 60,000 Scotch-Irish Presbyterians right here in the Shenandoah Valley within 50 miles of where I'm sitting. And that was the American Revolution right there. These people just simply would not give up. Well, they were independent. They were not controlled by anybody. They were not misled by anybody. And so they fought through the victory. And that is what it takes. In America, I have lectured for years that America has not yet fulfilled its promise because of these alien invaders and because of the British connection since 1787, that America has never fulfilled its promise to the world, which is a beacon of liberty for the entire world.
Yeah.
And that mission is still before us.
Well, I like that, and it certainly gives me hope. And I love the fact, Eustace, that you're willing to spend some time with a punk kid like me. Thank you so much for all that you do, and please stay in touch because I want to give you as much time as you want on this program.
Very good. I'll look forward to it any time because it's very important that people hear these things.
I agree.
I have been prevented from lecturing and prevented from speaking on a lot of radio talk shows because people did not want my message to get out. And it's a message of optimism and a message of belief in America, and that's something that they don't want people to hear.
Well, you're right about that, but I tell you what, Eustace, I've been in radio for about 12 years now. I've been fired from every job I've ever had, and if I could put out your message, and if maybe that will lead to my next inevitable firing, it would be an honor to go that way.
Well, I've certainly brought down a lot of talk show operators.
Eustace, we got to go, my friend. Keep in touch. God bless you, and folks, I hope you have a wonderful day, and enjoyed the interview as much as I did. We'll see you Friday.